Screw it, we're just gonna talk about comics.
Welcome to Screw It, we're just gonna talk about comics. That's comic books, you nitwit. That's the podcast where two brothers talk about comic books in a wholly original, amazingly different way that's never been done before. Two brothers talking about comic books on podcast format. I'm one of those two brothers. My name is Kevin Hines.
I'm the other brother, and my name's Will Hines.
Yeah, we are two brothers. We are two comedians and improv teachers and improv performers and generally decent fellas who live on opposite coasts and happen to be have the same parents. Right?
Yeah, how'd that happen? We became friends first and then realized that we had the same parents.
Yeah, we noticed that we lived in the same house. So we had that in common right away.
And we put it together that we were brothers. And then we also realized many years later that we both liked comic books and were, in fact, reading a lot of the same ones.
Yeah. And so we talk about comics. We've often talked about comic books. And this podcast is an excuse to let us talk about comic books to each other. And we're recording it and forcing you to listen. You, the listener. Yes. And we're wrapping up our, fifth season. And this season has been about The Sandman, Neil Gaiman's magnificent Vertigo comic book series that ran in the early 90s. That sort of was one of the reasons Vertigo formed, was because of this comic book. Sort of changed comic books. It was a very adult comic book and sort of put Neil Gaiman on the map in a way that he hadn't been before, and has led to his amazing career. I'm certain it's what kicked it off.
And Kevin and I are both fans, and so yeah, we're gonna wrap it up today. We were gonna go over an issue from the final arc, The Wake, but I think we're just gonna do a more general wrap up discussion. But we'll talk a little bit about The Wake. But
we've spent the previous 9 episodes of this podcast talking about an issue from almost an issue from every trade. I think we skipped one collection.
Yeah.
We did 2 from another collection, and now we're skipping The Wake. So, go back and listen to those episodes. We're going to spoil everything for you. If you haven't listened to all those episodes, we're going to talk about that. We're assuming you've read all 75 issues and are a Sandman fan at this point.
Yeah. Although I do think, this is a pretty spoiler-proof series. Like, even if you know the endings and things that happen in the stories are still really fun. This is not like a plot twist dependent story too much.
Right. No, I don't think so.
It's the characters you meet along the way and sort of the ideas and stuff like that. And they're just as good whether you know they're coming or not.
So how much of the series did you reread for this season, Will?
Most of it.
And how was it on this reread?
I loved it. Still, I loved it even more.
Great.
I think it completely holds up. I can't believe how good it was. Just, we've said this about Watchmen and some of the Ditko Spider-Mans and, things we've talked about that you can't believe that this stuff first came out, or like Batman Year One, we talked about it, that some of this stuff just would come out as a monthly issue where it would just be like along with, issues that, along as like sort of like standard fare superhero story, there could be an issue of Sandman, which to me would be like, it could be one of the best stories you'd ever read.
Just right. There's right Marvel there. Team Up, Spider-Man and the Wasp going after Arcade. Yeah. And next to it is Dream murdering his own son.
it's pretty crazy. Sometimes like the gems that are hidden right there on the rack.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I really loved it. I thought today I have a sort of a grab bag of things I want to talk about today.
Sure.
First of all, I just want to quickly just talk about a few of the things that sort of happened after Sandman ended.
Okay. Do you want to talk first about anything in The Wake that's of interest?
Let's talk about The Wake. Yeah, so The Wake is the final arc.
That we're not covering.
We're not really covering because, I don't know, I think it summarizes kind of badly, it's really fun to read, but there's basically 3 issues of the burial of Dream, the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is, you meet almost every character, again, that has been in the series, attends the funeral is in the dreaming. So to attend it, you have to go to sleep. And
now we're talking. That's my kind of social gathering.
Yeah. So you have a dream of the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get to see like every character, like Hob, the man who lives forever, each of the Endling siblings.
Endless. I think you said Endling.
Oh my God. Yeah. Endless. I don't know why I said Endling. There's lots of weird cameos. Like, you see Batman, Clark Kent, and the Martian Manhunter at this funeral. They have like a little conversation. You see, I think it's The Question, Rorschach, and John Constantine all having a conversation, and they're sort of dressed the same.
Is it? It must be John Constantine. I was going to say maybe it's Mr. A.
I don't think it's Mr. A.
Oh, no, it's definitely John Constantine.
Yeah, I'm showing Kevin the picture.
That might be the Spectre, though, the other one, or something like that.
Oh, yeah, it could be like the Phantom Stranger, maybe.
The Phantom Stranger,
like
that's who I'm thinking of, yes.
That's probably who it is. That's more of a Neil Gaiman deep cut 70s pull.
Yeah, that's definitely The Question, though, in the middle.
There's like, it is from the your own point of view. You, the reader, are attending the funeral, and so there's sort of like a Christopher Guest mockumentary style where all the characters are addressing you. And saying their feelings to you.
Do they look like out of the comic book?
Yeah. They like look at you, or sometimes you're eavesdropping and sometimes they look right at you and they talk. Like I'm showing Kevin, here's Thessaly, Sandman's ex-girlfriend who was in A Game of You. And she's like just looking at the reader and saying how she feels.
Hmm.
She cries at the end. Beach.
Weak.
Yeah, which is weak. And that's why Sandman broke up with her. And it's sort of plotless. Like Dream dies in issue 69, and then there's three issues of a funeral, but like somehow it's just so entertaining to hear these people chat. And there's creepy little Sandman stuff, like they do go to the City of the Dead that we talked about in the Saruman issue, and they go to this room beneath the city and get the appropriate ceremonial objects to bury Dream with. And there's like a whole little ritual they do, and that's kind of creepy and fun, and that's very Sandman. And it's got that mix, that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy thing we've talked about throughout this series, where they sort of casually talk about very grand things in a way that's funny. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
He's all the way dead, is he? Yes, that's right. All the way dead. Ah, it's a shame. I was hoping there'd be a little left. Like that sort of stuff kind of happens a lot.
And then after that, there's two single issue stories to wrap up
the
whole thing. Three.
There's one where we visit Hob again, the man who lives forever, and we see how he's doing, and Death visits him and asks if he wants to die, and he says no. But we see his life, and it's in our time, and it's very funny. It's set at a Renaissance fair. He's dating a woman who is a waiter at a Renaissance fair, and he remembers the actual Renaissance. So he's walking around being like, this is incredibly dumb. Like, you could actually do better than this without even trying that hard, but you wouldn't like it. There should be flies in all this food, and like we should smell shit everywhere.
He'd be annoying to be at the Renaissance Fair with.
Then there's an issue of Shakespeare writing The Tempest. It was established much earlier, like what we've said before. There's Shakespeare all over Sandman series. You can't go like three issues without Shakespeare like showing up, or like somebody talking about King Lear or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was established in like issue 19 or something that Dream gave Shakespeare his writing ability in exchange for two plays about dreams. And one of them is Midsummer Night's Dream, and that's issue 19. And then this is The Tempest. And it kind of is just going over what Shakespeare's life is like. And Dream visits him to see how it's going or whatever. And it's implied in this issue, and I think this is not totally true, that Shakespeare finishes The Tempest and then he loses his ability to write.
Hmm.
Like he finished the contract and so no
true.
Longer has
I bet
his
that's
talent.
True.
And it's really fun. And then there's a final issue in like which men are lost in a reality storm in the desert, and they like they're trading stories and talking about nightmares and stuff like that. Oh, wait a minute. I got it mixed up. The Shakespeare one is the very last issue.
You got the order mixed up with all those things.
It's the Hob issue, and then the reality storm in the desert, and then the Shakespeare issue, and that's the last issue of Sandman.
I get the feeling of Hob that Neil Gaiman wrote that issue, then brought Hob back, like in that little moment
in Season of Mists.
In Season of Mists, to say like goodbye to him, and then sort of was like, oh, I want to keep seeing this character because he shows up a lot. He doesn't need to show up in World's End, and he does.
Yeah, he's got a big part in World's End. Yeah,
and I think that just felt like, oh, I like this character, and I feel
he's in Kindly Ones,
which makes a little bit of sense since it's wrapping things up, unless it's a big part in Kindly Ones.
No, but it's just one of the, Dream is visiting him again. Yeah. There's like three times where Dream visits Hob to be like, I think I'm about to die.
Yeah. And definitely like this last issue just feels like, oh, I got to wrap up this guy. I've now visited him too many times. He's become a big character. Or maybe he always knew. Like, Shakespeare sort of feels like he knew he was going to do a couple extra Shakespeare stories.
Yeah.
But Hobbs, I wonder if Hobbs like took on a life of his own a little bit.
You know, it's impossible to know, of course, like how much artists plan ahead, but maybe because we're improvisers, but I always kind of assume that stuff is unplanned. That did you hear the story about how the Silver Surfer got like invented, like with Lee and Kirby?
A little bit, yes. Like Kirby drew it on some page and Stanley's like, put more of that in. I like that dude.
Yes. Let's make this guy a character just based on the look.
Yeah.
And then Kirby whipped him up into a whole thing.
Yeah.
But like,
but he's like central to the plot. Of the Galactus, the first Galactus plot, he saves the world.
Yes. So he really whipped it up a lot.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's the way it kind of happens a lot. Like you don't, do you remember Bloom County, the comic book strip?
Sure. Yeah, of course.
Well, the star of that strip is Milo Bloom, the newspaper editor.
Right.
And he is supposed to be the central character. But if you ask anybody who remembers Bloom County who the main character is, they might not even know that Milo Bloom is a character in that strip. And
right.
Opus the Penguin is the main character. Or maybe Bill the Cat might be the one they remember. But like,
they definitely remember Opus. But I would say Bill the Cat is probably the second most remembered character. And then maybe like Steve Dallas.
Steve Dallas, right, right. And then Quiche Lorraine and then Donald Trump. Those are the main characters. But... I'm just saying, they don't know when they start, or Charlie Brown, right? Like Snoopy sort of took over Peanuts from within, kind of.
Yeah. Charlie Brown still held on, I think.
Sure, Charlie Brown maintained, he's one of the central sons of that galaxy, but...
But Snoopy certainly became a bigger part than you'd think Charlie Brown's dog should be.
I have the dumbest examples of this. Or like Happy Days started and it was focusing on Richie Cunningham, but then the Fonz shows up and he's supposed to be like... just a Kramer character, but he ends up basically being the star of Happy Days.
Yeah. Or Michael J. Fox on Family Ties. That's less of a big deal because he was a major character on the show, but it was supposed to be about the parents.
It's supposed to be evenly distributed, like, oh, the generational divide between these hippie parents and their 80s kids.
But
Alex Keaton just takes over.
But the parents were, like, established, or definitely the mom was.
Yes, yeah. She was, like, the main star of that show.
So, yeah.
Actor, yeah. So, like... Yeah, you don't know how it's going to shake up. And I think the best people kind of roll with stuff pretty well. Like, and I think the Sandman, for all of its like times that it says, here are the rules of the dreaming, I believe that Neil Gaiman is making those up at the moment he writes that line, that he's not thought about it that much before. And like when he got to like deciding that death, like in the very first issue of Sandman, it is established that there is Dream and he has a sibling, Death, who's a woman. They're like, ah, we meant to catch your sister. We got you. You'll have to do. And then at some point, Neil's like, come on, maybe I'll give him other siblings. And I think it's like as he's coming up on issue whatever, Season of Mists, whatever issue that was, we never got that right, 21 or 22 or whatever, that only then does he pick the siblings.
Hmm.
And he's like, maybe I'll have this many. Maybe this, add this person, this. Yeah, that seems pretty good. Like, I don't believe it was thought out much before that. I have no idea I'll say why I think that, actually. And I have no evidence. I have not read or anything. Mm-hmm. It's because the rules that he makes up, they're like a little sloppy. Like, they don't make sense if you were going to map out. They feel like an improvised lie. And not like a planned kingdom.
I mean, he definitely didn't write those first six issues going, I'm going to do 75 issues. It's going to end with his death.
Right.
He might have realized pretty early on that maybe he was going to work towards his death.
Yeah, probably.
But I don't think he, maybe he did. I don't know.
Maybe it's one of those things where like you know, a lot of things go through your mind. You're mm-hmm. like, oh, maybe he'll end up dying. Maybe he'll end up facing off against this magician in the first issue at the very end. You know, maybe he'll get married to Fonzie.
Yeah. Fonzie was a big part of Sandman.
The early drafts of Sandman. Yeah. I think it was a mistake to cut him out. But,
So the wake
is sort of a long victory lap of revisiting old characters, and it's enjoyable. It might be just a little bit drawn out. I don't know, but I don't know. I liked reading it, so who am I to say?
It's interesting ending on sort of three done-in-one stories.
Just leftover ones he had, maybe.
Yeah, rather than like ending on the actual wake, but
maybe he wanted to hit 75. Maybe he just had like just a numerology
thing. Yeah.
It's kind of just a nice number.
I mean, ending with Shakespeare also feels, no one's going to argue with that, I guess. So then after the wake, what happens with Sandman? Nothing ever, right? We never hear from Sandman or Neil Gaiman again.
That's it. He's a lost artist. He's like J.D. Salinger. I think he should do something. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is where our podcast really falls short. I don't know. Like, I do know some of this, but like, the Sandman, the character Dream, only Neil Gaiman has used Dream, and he's used him
Morpheus,
the incarnation of Dream that we know yes. throughout the series. And he has used him a couple of times, but not that often. Many of the other characters in the Sandman universe have been used a lot. And like you've mentioned several times, they are sort of still in play in the DC Comics universe.
Yeah, there's tons and tons of Sandman universe spinoffs.
Yeah, some of the ones I've read are the Dead Boy Detectives, who are two kids who, when hell is opened up and everybody from hell just runs over the earth, there's a one-shot story of two kids in a British boarding school who are tortured by all the evil ghosts of that boarding school's past, and they die. But then at the end, nobody comes to collect their ghosts because the afterlife is overwhelmed. So they decide just to run along the earth as dead boys solving mysteries. And that is a spinoff story by Ed Brubaker, I think.
Yeah, he definitely did. They might have done multiple. He definitely did one of them. Thessaly, I know, was one. I think that was by Bill Willingham of Freight Fables. There's been a couple on the Dreaming itself.
Just the world of the Dreaming with Daniel Dream.
I don't think Daniel has even been a part of it. I think it's like Merv Pumpkinhead and Lucien and those characters, sort of.
Fun.
I haven't read him. So I've read a couple issues of the most recent Dreaming, I should say, because Tom Fowler was doing art and I really like his work. Oh, no, he does Books of Magic. Anyway, I tried the first few issues of kind of all the recent Sandman books. I didn't stick with any of them, but they're all pretty good.
I haven't read those, but whenever Neil Gaiman does a Sandman story, I read it. And he's done, to my knowledge, three. Well, okay, first, there was two Death miniseries. He did The High Cost of Living and Time of Your Life.
Was the first one during the run of Sandman,
yes.
though, right?
Yes. Maybe both of them were. The first one definitely was. And they were really fun.
I've definitely read the first one. I maybe haven't read the second one.
I mean, there's an argument to be made that, like, Death is just a better character than Dream and should have been like just done a lot more with. I don't know. The high cost of living is something that is introduced in the main story of Sandman, which is that once a century, Death is like permitted to spend a day on Earth as a mortal just to see what life is like with the people whose lives she takes. And so one of them is we see her basically get into a relationship with a teenage boy and fall in love.
Feels inappropriate.
Probably. She's millions of years old. But that's really fun. And then I can't remember what the time of your life is about.
Yeah. I think the one I read was definitely the one where she gets to be alive. And then there was also a couple of Sandman follow-ups, right? Wasn't there like a graphic novel or like a self-contained story that's like prose with illustration?
Yes. He claimed it was a Japanese. There's a Destiny story, A Chronicle of Deaths Foretold. I've never even knew about this.
Is it by Neil Gaiman?
No, it's not. Okay, good. That's why I didn't hear about it. Phew. I'm sorry, Kevin. What did you just ask me that I'm trying to
figure
out?
There was a prose illustrated Sandman story, wasn't there?
Yeah, yeah. He claimed it was like a Japanese folktale that he had dug up, but it was not. It was just a story he made up entirely. It initially was all prose, and then it was released with illustrations. And the name of it is super well known, and anybody who's a real fan knows this name and would be able to just say it.
Sure, sure, you're about to do.
Which I easily remember it, and so that's no problem for me to say. The Dream Hunters.
Right, just rolls off your tongue.
Just rolls off the tongue. I had it the whole time. And I don't remember it. I remember reading it and really liking it. But the thing I, and then he did Endless Nights, which I love, and I think that is just as good as the original series and a must buy.
Is that the one J.H. Williams did?
Yeah.
That I read that one.
Oh, no.
No, it isn't.
I think he did one of the issues of Dream.
J.H. Williams Endless, did like a mini series that involved like a giant cat.
Yes, that's the Overture.
Okay, that's what I read.
Yes, that came out not terribly long ago, like 5 years ago or something.
Like for the anniversary, some anniversary. It,
that's also really good. And his art is so...
So I have not read Endless Nights then.
Oh, yeah. Endless Nights is, I think, a must read. Dream Hunters is good. High Cost of Living is good. I barely remember Time of Your Life, but I remember thinking it was good. But like Endless Nights to me is a home run. It's some of my favorite Sandman stories. Hmm. And he did it sometime after the original, like... 15 years or 10 years. But there's like one story for each of the Endless. And 2003. So about like,
like 10
7 years,
years
after the original
7
series.
Years, yeah.
Yeah, just about, yeah, 7 years after the original series ended. And boy, each story was so good. Or the Destiny one is barely a story because how do you tell a character? It's like doing a Dr. Manhattan story. It's like just a person who knows everything. But Death's story was so good. Can I tell you the ideas of some
of
them? Sure. This is now going from memory. I have not reread that. I actually went to look for, I forgot that when I moved to LA in the end of 2013.
10 years after Endless Nights.
Exactly, which is why I moved. You know, I had all these books in my New York apartment, and rather than move them, I gave a ton of them away. And I gave away all of my Sandman collections. Because my thinking was, any book that I can repurchase or get from a library, I'll give away, unless it's like given to me as a gift. Just because it's like, we have such access to media that we don't need to just have our own personal copy of it. This is what I was thinking, whether or not that's dumb. But I like... gave away like a hugely high percentage of my books. And I just thought, oh, I'll just buy them again. And I have rebought almost every Sandman volume because I come to a time where I want it. I'm like, I got to have it. And I've rebought it except for Endless Nights. I haven't repurchased. I just haven't got around to it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I ordered it while we were recording this.
Okay.
But so I don't have a copy to refer to. So this is just me remembering it from 2003. But Death Story, which is, I think, the first... I think there was, like, a little prologue of Destiny, and then Death is the next story. And it's, like, there's scenes of a super hedonistic party that looks like it's in, like, the 1800s, where some, like, Italian or Spanish royalty is, like, just throwing the party to end all parties. And, like, there's just... everyone's dressed up and there's like all this food going around and there's like sex happening in this room and there's weird entertainment where people are being brought out and like shot for fun. And then you realize that the party restarts every day. Everybody kind of, it's like Groundhog Day. Like they just get to live this day over and over again. And if they die or not is almost irrelevant because everybody comes back. And that's why they're so casual about everything they're doing. And there's a parallel story of a kid, modern times, going through, I think it's Italy, going through these ruins. And they cut back and forth, and this kid searching through the ruins and this indulgent party. And then the kid in our time stumbles upon Death, who we, the reader, recognize as Death, and he doesn't know. And she's like standing outside a door. And he's like, what are you doing? She's like, I'm waiting to get in here. And he's like, well, why don't you just go in? She's like, not allowed. I need someone else to open it. And then you realize that the main Duke found some spell that keeps death out of their castle as long as nobody leaves. So they just have gotten into some weird loophole where they'll live forever as long as nobody opens the door or something. And this kid's like, I'll open it. And he opens up the door and she goes in and they all just instantly finally die. And she takes them all. And she's waited like 150 years.
And that kid has to live with that.
Yeah. I just remember thinking it was rad. Like the way it kind of like the way it slowly dawns on you what's happening. Mm-hmm. And the specifics of the party are very like Neil Gaiman-y and strange. Like a lot of the characters have like backstories that are just casually referred to, which of course like Neil Gaiman characters, they, you could imagine them like spinning off and stuff like that. That was just the first story. I was like, this is awesome.
And then every issue after that, same story.
Yeah, in a very meta move.
Hey, it's a good story. It's a good story.
I remember the dream story is kind of got like he. It takes place like in very ancient times, and the Endless are visiting with suns and planets. Like suns and planets have manifest as people. And they are somehow talking with the Endless to make their pitch of, it's like all the stars are very young, but they have dreams and they have desires and despairs and they're worried about their deaths. And that's fun.
Okay. I'll have to check this out.
There's a shot, the part of it that I remember is in that story, there is... Despair is the original despair because it was revealed in the Sandman series that the despair that we know is the second person to be despair. Mm-hmm. So you meet the original despair who is a totally different personality, but it looks just like despair. And despair is talking to the son of Krypton.
Oh, interesting.
And is like, I got a special plan for you. You will lose your planet. You will have the most glorious planet in the solar system, but it will be, you are going to destroy it. It will die in your, you'll have to watch it die. And the planet's like, why, what did I do? Like, please, that's not fair. And either Dream or somebody else walks up and says, okay, there will be one heir of your planet that will live and be a great man.
Right, Spider-Man.
And it was only after I read it like the second time that I was like, oh, it's Superman. They're talking Spider-Man. About Superman.
I thought it was Spider-Man.
I think the name of the planet was Rao, R-A-O or something.
The sun, but it was like, yeah. Right.
Kind of a cool like nerd reference.
That's because Superman would say like Great Rao or something in the...
Yes. So like Despair is talking to a star called Rao, but like it was subtle enough that I missed it at first. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, they're setting up Superman here. That's kind of fun.
So now Neil Gaiman gets commission every time Superman is used. It was a real
smart move. Yeah. He got copyright.
Mm-hmm. He's like, take that, Siegel and Schuster.
Yeah. That's the name of the story. Take that, Siegel and Schuster.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah, vindictive for a man like Neil Gaiman. I don't think he would do that, but I guess he did.
And then, Destruction is, oh, some of these I remember were quite short. Like, one of them is about a soldier who meets Desire and falls in love with her and just lusts for her so badly it ruins her life. Not just lusts, mm-hmm. loves and lusts. But the best story is Destruction, the lost Endless, who's just roaming the earth and comes along an archaeological dig where they have this great, great find they're super excited about. It's a meteor that has crashed and they don't know what it is. And Destruction wanders up and realizes that it is a collection of weapons from another, incredibly powerful weapons. And they can't tell, the archaeologist cannot discern the technology, but he recognizes it right away. He's like, oh yeah, these are weapons of destruction. And they're like, how do you know? He's like, they're all the same. All weapons of destruction. They all look the same. And he basically convinces them to destroy it and to not salvage it.
Good guy.
I don't know. I love it. I love Endless Nights.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Frank, what's his name? Quitely?
Yeah.
Quitely. He did the art for the Destruction one, and oof, is it good. I mean, all the art for the, everything is really good.
That must have been exciting, especially at that point, because, I mean, it's not like he didn't get great artists before, but now this comic sort of sat there and become even greater and greater, and now there's all these new artists on the scene.
Who would like kind of come up revering it.
Yeah, I thought that when J.H. Williams III did Overture, I was like, well, he is a perfect Sandman artist. Like,
yes.
His work on Promethea feels like this guy is...
It feels like Sandman.
Feels like he's auditioning to do Sandman, a comic that doesn't exist anymore, and then he got to do it.
I totally agree. When I read Promethea, which I love, and it's insane. Promethea is crazy, but beautiful. I mean, I think J.H. Williams kind of saves Promethea. Like,
he
makes it much more readable than it would be.
Yeah, if it didn't have an artist of that caliber, Promethea is a cool idea, but kind of a boring read.
Or it starts off pretty traditional, but it quickly just becomes a diatribe on the philosophy of magic.
I mean, the second 12 issues of Promethea, which is like 12 to 24, 13 to 24, which is just an exploration of all the levels of magic, is one of my favorite reads ever. I didn't understand any of it. I found it captivating and beautiful.
Yes, me too. I felt the same way. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And it's to J.H. Williams' credit, I think.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And I remember reading it being like, this feels like a Sandman story. And his art is great of Overture. For some reason, I feel like the story of Overture, it didn't grab me as much. I do remember enjoying it, but like, it didn't stick with me.
I don't remember it that well. I only read it the one time, but I remember really enjoying it. And that's somebody who is not a huge Sandman fan. Like, I haven't read all the Sandman at that point, but I remember just reading it being like, oh, new Sandman. Let's see if it's good. I'm like, oh, this is good. I like this. But Endless Nights, I must have missed. You said 2003. Yeah, I don't have a good reason for missing that. I was in New York. You should have told me about it. 2003, though, the Red Sox just missed the World Series. I probably wasn't in any emotional shape.
In the Dream story, I'm looking on the Wikipedia. I forgot the main part of it. I remember the Superman part. Dream is dating... like an alien, and Desire convinces her to fall in love with a star and leave him. And that begins the dislike of Desire and Dream.
Hmm.
And also, Delirium has not yet become Delirium. You see her as Delight. She's like happy and together.
That's nice.
Yeah. Anyway. I really love it. So I think I really do like, though, that Neil Gaiman has not done too much with Sandman. I think it's one of those things where I like that the original body of work is sort of left to just be high quality and can't really be tarnished by sort of a lame reboot or something like that. I mean, Endless Nights and Overture were a little bit of a revisiting than like a reboot. And so
Endless Nights sounds more like Untold Tales.
Exactly. Like it didn't seem like. It was not framed as Sandman's back. It was just like, oh, this would be kind of fun.
I think Overture was about Daniel. So that feels like a little, like a...
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Like a new story, or at least mostly about Daniel.
Neil Gaiman, I'm a fan of Neil Gaiman. Mm-hmm. What have I read? Good Omens, American Gods, Coraline.
That's
Coraline. Coraline is a Shakespeare play. Coraline, saw the movie. They Might Be Giants song.
They sing, like, they do the singing voice of one of the characters.
I don't remember, but the characters is portrayed in a very John Linnell like style when they're singing that song. And that might be it from what I've read of Neil Gaiman. I didn't read his like 1602 or whatever that was.
The comic book, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not good. I read Neverwhere. I read Good Omens. I read American Gods. I read very recently, I read the...
Is Mirror Mask one of the things he did?
Maybe. I read his short story collection, Smoke and Mirrors. Is that him?
I'll find out.
That's good. Whatever it's called, it's a good collection. And then I read very recently. I read what was his short? He wrote like a novella, like the house at the lake or something like that. Oh, what was that called?
The Ocean at the End of the Lane.
Yes, that's it. And I loved it.
Oh, oh really?
I really, really love that. I'm really into novellas recently. They're really quick reads and they're really fun. Particularly when I was working in New York, they're great like commute reads. And man, I read that and I was like, oh man, this is hitting me right where I want story. It was perfect.
Oh, great.
It was like a modern horror fairy tale. Not modern. Yeah, modern. I mean, it just felt cool.
So I think Stardust is what I was trying to think of when I said Mirror Mask. Oh, yeah.
I did not read Stardust.
1602 was the comics he did for Marvel.
Which I think he did to earn money for a lawsuit he was in with Todd McFarlane.
Okay. And then he did The Eternals.
Right. I didn't read that either. Soon to be a major motion picture.
Is it based on his writings?
I have no idea. I doubt it.
I guess he did something called Norse Mythology, like his retellings
of the
Norse gods.
That's going not now. That's a current comic now, but I think that's just adapting from his book on Norse Mythology.
Okay. And so, I mean, I've liked every single thing of his I've read. For whatever reason, nothing has grabbed me as solidly as Sandman. Like, American Gods I really enjoyed, but I do remember, I mean, it was just like a slog. Like, it started off great, it ended great, and there was this long stretch in the middle where I was, like, just kind of pushing myself through it. And in Sandman, I could never stop reading. Like, I just could tear through everything. Good Omens was a bit easier to read, but you know, he co-wrote that with Terry Pratchett, and Terry Pratchett's voice is very dominant in that book.
Yes.
I would almost say it's more of a Terry Pratchett novel with sort of some Neil Gaiman like preludes and connective tissue.
Yeah. I didn't love Good Omens. I didn't love American Gods. I liked parts of American Gods. I really, really enjoyed Neverwhere. Which I think maybe was
Ocean at the End of the Lane.
I think Neverwhere is maybe written as like a radio drama or something and then adapted into a book or something like that. Mm. It's one of those weird things, sort of like Hitchhikers. But I really enjoyed Neverwhere. Definitely feels like a Hitchhikers, like Neil Gaiman's version of Hitchhikers. But I like Hitchhikers enough that I was like, ooh, I'm into this.
Oh, you're right. It was a radio teleplay and then it got adapted into a book.
And then
he adapted it into a book.
Yes, yes. I don't know if I've read Coraline. I've seen the movie and enjoy it a lot. But yeah, and I read a short story collection, which like half those stories are amazing and the other half are good.
I wonder which one it is. It's not the Graveyard book. That's a children's book.
No, it's something like Smoke and Mirrors or something like that. If there's anything like that on there. Are you looking at it as...
this is a website I have called Wikipedia.
Okay, cool. Cool. Never heard of it.
I don't think you'd like it. I'm going to find out. I'll find out what he's done here.
Where is it? Smoke and Mirrors. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, for some reason I can't see it here.
I just Googled Neil Gaiman short stories.
Oh yeah. Smoke and Mirrors. What's the Ansari Boys? Is that another thing he's done?
That is like a companion novel to the American Gods.
Okay. Okay.
Which I've not read because I didn't love American Gods. So I didn't go and read the companion book, and there's parts of American Gods that are great, but there's just part, I didn't care about the main story. I just cared about like the myths.
But that's sort of common about Sandman stuff. Like the side characters and the digressions were almost more reliable than the main thrust of the story, even in Sandman, I think, a lot of times.
Let's take a short break and then let's...
Oh, gosh, that's right.
Do some email and then wrap this up in that order, I think.
Okay.
Hey, it's us again, your hosts, Kevin and Will Hines, and we want to hear from you.
That's right. You can email us at screwitspidey@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at screwitcomics. We also have an Instagram account where we post images from the comics that we talk about, and that's screwitcomics on Instagram.
That's three different ways to connect with us. Tell us your thoughts about the issues we're talking about, or the format of the show, or our life choices that have led us to this point. Reach out and tell us anything, honestly, and we might talk about it on a future episode of this podcast.
Thanks for listening to Screw It, We're Just Going to Talk About Comics from Campfire Media.
We're back. So I think we should do a couple quick emails, see how much time where we're at, and then if we've got time, I've got a few other things we can talk about. Or unless there's something okay. else you need to say in this
round. I've got it, and I just thank you, Kevin, for letting us cover Sandman.
You're welcome.
I mean, or just for agreeing to
it. You owe me big. okay, we've got a few emails. We've got a couple from Benjamin Ordung. Remember him?
Context, history, whatever?
Yes. Do you want me to summarize or do you want me to read the whole thing?
Your call.
I'm going to summarize.
Okay.
He talks about a issue of Legends of the Dark Knight, issue number 94 that he read.
Okay.
That was one of these stories where it seems like each chapter was illustrated like in a different style, like a Bob Kane style, Dick Sprang style, Neil Adams, Frank Miller style. He goes, I don't recall it being an amazing comic or significant in any way. It doesn't even really have Batman in it. Perhaps he saves him in the end. Who knows? He doesn't seem to remember. You were obviously covering comics and series that resonate or got stuck in your head, but are there any comics out there that you have absolutely no idea why you remember it? Like a comic that sticks in your head, but isn't that amazing?
It's a weird question.
Yeah, it is a very weird question. That's why I'm summarizing it. He wrote it in a long way.
I think like when I was reading the most comics, a striking cover or just like an interesting moment could stick with me. Even if I remember there was an issue of Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, where Kyle Baker did the cover and it was like Santa Claus holding a gun.
Yeah. I think Peter David wrote that issue.
I think Peter David wrote the issue and Kyle Baker did not draw the issue. I don't think it was just the cover. And that stuck with me, but I don't remember the issue. Speaking of Peter David, Spidey in the Suburbs always stuck with me, but I'm not sure if that would actually be good if I reread it.
I bet it's pretty good. It probably isn't as good as you remember, but I bet it's pretty good. Yeah, there's lots of comics that stick with me. I've read so many now that I don't think there's anything that I remember like, oh, this isn't extremely bad or extremely good. It's just like the mediocre stuff as lost in the sea. There's definitely lots of comic books I remember like moments from.
Right. Like we talked about the moment where Human Torch shaves off Prince Namor's beard to discover he's the Submariner in FF number 5.
Yeah.
Four. And that stuck with us.
Yeah. So sometimes I won't remember like a series or a run that much, but I'll remember a moment here or a moment there. But I can't think of like any like, oh, this comic was bad and I don't like it. I don't even know if I can remember any like really atrocious comics. If they're atrocious, I don't remember them well.
Sometimes the stuff I read as a kid, just when there was a novelty to comic books at all, I remember them. I read this like giant size Batman comic in the 70s that was like the Joker opens up a hamburger chain.
Sure.
He goes straight and opens up a restaurant chain of fast food hamburgers and they're a hit. Like everybody across the country is eating these burgers like crazy. And it turns out all of the restaurants are outfitted with cameras that hypnotize you. One, into thinking the burgers are good.
Mm-hmm.
And two, creating you as a sleeper agent that the Joker could like invoke at some point.
Smart move.
And Batman like foils him. And I bet you that comic is bad.
doesn't sound great.
But I loved it, and like, and I still remember it. Now I remember reading it like in a hotel, like on some family trip or something, and just being riveted by it.
I mean, I remember you having a digest with Superman Red, Superman Blue in it.
Oh, I remember that very well.
And I loved that. So I reread that story over and over and over again. I think that's good, though. I think it is like a very fun imaginary Elseworlds tale.
I remember that collection very well. In that same collection, there's the issue. That's like the gimmick Superman book. It's like one of them, there's the super car and the super
right.
dog and horse that there's an issue with all of them in it.
Don't remember.
There's the origin of Bizarro is in that collection, I think.
I mostly just remember Superman Red and Superman Blue. We had that one. We had like the Origins volume with Metamorpho and the Atom, which... We've talked about before. The one thing I remember from the Adam story is how to tell stalactites and stalagmites apart.
Yeah, me too. I remember the panel.
I think I do too. I remember a few moments from it, but I don't remember much about that issue. I remember like a little bit, like the White Dwarf. I don't remember like how he solved the problem of not blowing up, or whether it just didn't blow him up for some reason.
Right, he kept shrinking things and they would explode, but right. He didn't explode when he shrank or whatever.
Anyway, but I don't have a good answer for you, Ben. Sorry.
Ben, your brain is interesting and ours is not as interesting.
So Benjamin sends a second email.
Benjamin doesn't like to just send one email.
No, he does not. And in this email he asks, in your opinion, what format makes the best Sandman television series?
What format?
Yeah, and then he sort of like lists a bunch that are clearly bad, like Riverdale, teen drama, campy supernatural, crazy preacher, trippy Legion, Game of Thrones, R-rated. But I think it's basically just like a well-done HBO show is the way to do it.
Yeah.
So I'd rather ask this question of you, Will, instead of that question. I don't think that's an interesting question.
I think I have an answer to it.
Okay, well, go ahead. Give me your answer then first.
Well, I think Tales from the Crypt is a better inspiration. Like, you wouldn't want a crazy Crypt Keeper thing, but an anthology feel.
But wouldn't the best version of Sandman just be like a pretty faithful, well-done retelling of these issues?
Yes, of course. I don't know. It's so tricky.
I mean, they're making it. So we'll see what they choose to do, what Neil chooses to do with that.
Have we talked about this? There's like a fan-made short film of Sandman out there that they filmed the diner story that we didn't go over from the first seven issues. There's like a pretty gory and terrifying horror story in issue like six or something like that, where Dr. Destiny or whatever his name is, or John D.
Dr. Destiny.
With the Sandman's ruby, goes into a diner, assumes control of everybody in there, and spends 24 hours just making them all torture each other in various ways until Sandman shows up at the end and wants his ruby. And so somebody like filmed that issue, fan made, and it's one of those things where it's both low budget but done quite well. Like, it looks really good. Like, somebody spent a lot of
there's a lot of these really good fan films like that that are fun.
Yeah, so this was one, and I mean, it's incredible. I have to say something negative about it though, which is that, like, I think it somehow misses the tone of the comic, and I can't point to anything that's like bad. It's just the sum total of it does not have the effect of reading the book, and I, you know, smarter people than me will have to figure that out, but I don't know what it is. It's they nailed the look of it.
Yeah.
And they just did the script. Like, they were faithful to the story.
Yeah. I think a good adaptation of Sandman doesn't have to be faithful. They probably skip some stories or change some things. It's too much to cover it all. So you have to pick and choose what you're going to cover.
I think the challenge is so much of Sandman, you know, having just reread most of it, is like one person telling another person a cool idea. Like, that happens so often in Sandman, where someone's like, I come from a city where blah, 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 you know, and it's like, oh, that sounds good. But in a book, you can read dialogue. It's internal. It lives in your head, and the voice that you give it, it can be sort of more lively. And that seems like that would be challenging television. Yeah.
I think you'd probably cut like a third of the Sandman, probably create a few new things, especially if Neil's involved, he's going to help do that. But here's my other question. What is a believable adaption that could exist that you think would be a terrible Sandman adaption, but one that you think could happen? like it wouldn't be like, it has to be something that you could imagine a television channel going, yeah, we got the rights to Sandman.
Okay, well, this is kind of a boring answer, but like a Watchmen Zack Snyder style remake where it like looks cool, but they like sex it up and action it up. And it's like, you know, they really play up like Sandman fighting Lucifer for his helmet. You know what I mean? Yeah. And they miss Sandman and Death hanging out in Washington Square Park.
Can you imagine a version where like the Lucifer series is just Lucifer solving crimes? Can you imagine a version with Dream and maybe Delirium showing up once in a while to help someone solve horror crimes with his dream abilities?
I think it'd be easier to make a Delirium series with Delirium solving crimes than it would be Dream. Like, Dream was such a mopey, weird teenager. Like, but I think I could a Delirium horror anthology. That one I could imagine easily.
You could probably do a Death series pretty easily too, as you said.
I think you could do an Endless series. That might be the way to go, to like switch amongst all of them. Because I could imagine a good Destruction story.
Mm-hmm. One season for each one as the focus.
I don't know. Maybe like there's a season where the final episode is all of them together at dinner, like, and you're just getting to know them throughout the season.
We have an email from Nick Wood. Okay. Hey guys, I heard your podcast today and you went on a bit about things getting deed. Remember this, Will? And how that might be young person slang. As a younger person, I can tell you that means to dick someone down. Pardon my French, but to fuck someone. So yeah, conversation was hilarious. Keep it up, milksots. I do remember this conversation. We knew that, Nick.
Well, I don't know. I don't remember this. What were we talking about?
Somehow D.
How do we talk about somebody being D?
Because of all the D names.
Oh, okay.
So somehow it just came up being D'd, but like, and we used it inappropriately. That was the joke, I think. I don't know. It feels lame to say.
I guess that's on us if it wasn't obvious.
Yeah.
We are professional comedians. Yeah, I mean, we were real middle of the pack in a theater where everybody was trained to like us.
If you're not laughing every other thing we say, you missed a joke. Don't assume we didn't make a joke. Assume you missed it.
Yeah.
We got an email from Gabe Russo, who says, "Hi, Sop and Waste.
Ooh.
I've been enjoying the current show on Sandman. In the past, I read some Sandman, but not a lot. I got the occasional issue, and I have a couple of trade paperbacks, the first, third, and Death, High Cost of Living. My reading habits kind of mimic the podcast and jumping around. Recently, I picked up Books of Magic, which, while not written by Neil Gaiman, is set in the world, and I enjoyed it. A little Harry Potter-ish, but fun. Anyway, I have a 14-year-old trans son who's now very into Sandman. He picked up the first trade and loved it, so now we've gotten trades up to number 7. I've told him about the podcast, but that is a bridge too far, seemingly.
I understand.
Yeah, he loves manga, and now Sandman seems to be the first American comic that he is enjoying. I just wanted to drop a line and say that your podcast led me to getting back into comics. I found a great local store, Fallout Comics, in Tallahassee, Florida. Started a pull list, and I'm reading monthly books again after a long break. Now I leave comics laying around in the hopes they will be discovered and read by my son as well. Anyway, take it easy. P.S. Will, I'm a huge fan, and I listen to I Will Write Your Book, Screw It Beatles, all your appearances on CBB, and whatever else I happen to hear of you appearing. Kevin, you should do more podcast appearances. We know, Will, but you are a mystery, or at least I would like to hear more comedy from you. Thanks for all the free entertainment."
That's quite nice.
Yeah, I love that when people get into comics, or get back into comics because of us. So that's really great.
Yeah, thanks for telling us that.
A lot of podcasts are done in L.A., so I don't.
That's true. LA is way more of a podcast culture than New York. I mean, when I moved from New York to LA, like, I went from being someone who rarely listened to podcasts to like I had to just to be able to maintain my friendships with people.
Yeah. So I don't. Maybe I wouldn't get asked even if I was in LA, but I certainly pre-pandemic nobody was really doing them other than you and me over Zoom that much. So
yeah,
I don't get asked to do them. I would do them. But, yeah, I'm not in that loop.
Part of it is definitely being in LA. Like, it's crazy.
It doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
We have one more.
Okay.
This is from, Tony Labra. "Dear Kevin, Will, I had the opportunity to join my daughter's podcast." See, she doesn't even ask me to do her podcast.
That hurts.
Yeah. "I had the opportunity to join my daughter's podcast where she and her friend host a weekly discussion on a variety of topics they ask listeners to rank/vote. This week's episode was to rank your top 10 favorite MCU movies, and I was their first guest because of my so-called expertise on the merry Marvel universe. They specifically invited me to speak to little-known comic book-related tidbits that moviegoers would not necessarily know about the characters. Boy, do I have a whole new level of respect for the Hines brothers now. This podcast business is not as easy as you two make it look. I was channeling the Milksop vibe you both effortlessly exude and just blanked several times.
Milksop vibe.
Gave out wrong info. How many times have I yelled out loud while listening to you two, calling Betty Ross Betsy or Flash Thompson Flash Gordon, or my favorite when Will was asked to describe Sergeant Rock from memory? That was a dumpster fire. Well, can I tell you that I couldn't even...
Because I did Nick Fury,
yeah, you
right?
described Nick Fury, which I think is a fair mistake. Well, I can tell you that I couldn't even remember Robert Downey Jr.'s name, couldn't name Stan Lee's cameo in each of the movies. Can you guys? I cannot. I can name some of them, but... said that Thor was banished into space instead of Hulk to set up Planet Hulk and inspire the Ragnarok movie. Guys, great job on what you professionals do week in and week out, and I promise to do my homework if I ever get invited on yours or any comic book podcast in the future. My pitch to you is that I was a sucker for the ads in early comics, and I can speak to the power of comic book advertising. I ordered those so-called X-ray glasses from Johnson & Smith. I ordered those stupid sea monkeys. I fell for Puff the Magic Dragon. There was nothing more than an emaciated lizard that was near death when delivered via mail. And then he sends us a link to his daughter's podcast.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
That's really generous of him to be forgiving of our mistakes. There are podcasts that are way better than us, certainly way better than me on getting their facts right. But it is also tough when you're rambling and you journey to a subject you weren't ready to talk about necessarily, and you got to try to come up with on the fly the right info. It's tough. Also,
I've been sampling a lot of different comic book podcasts during the pandemic, just like one here, there, and a lot of them are written. Well, like they're like these people are going from scripts.
Really?
Yeah, they like written up scripts with like their talk about the comic that they're detailing, and the jokes are like written in.
What?
And sometimes a couple of them I know, like they make jokes about doing multiple takes and there's like bloopers at the end. And I'm like, well, we don't do any of that. So
none of that. I don't know if that's good or bad. Yeah. Like,
so I don't know.
I definitely should do more prep. I was listening to this podcast. Don't Let's Start, this podcast on They Might Be Giants, the band that I love. You're a big fan. And I really enjoy this podcast. And it is like obsessively researched, like, and edited really well. They don't script their conversation, but like they have notes and bullet points, and they get sound clips to give examples of everything they mention. They pretty thoroughly go over every, I mean, it's like really educational, and I'm loving it. And our podcast is nothing like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nowhere near that good. I mean, and Sandman, like I said, there is an annotated Sandman. There is a published version of Sandman
yes.
with like extensive footnotes that like says what every visual reference is. And I think I've even read, I think part of it was online and I read a lot of it, but I don't have it and I didn't get it.
I mean, also part of what we do is our connection to these comics. Which isn't necessarily something you can research. It's just sort of like, these are the feelings we had reading it. This is why we get emotional about it. This is why we keep going back to these books.
Yeah.
Anyway, if any of our listeners want to check out Kalen's podcast, it's called Yo Dats Rank. Y-O-D-A-T-S Rank, R-A-N-K. So check it out.
Pretty cool.
And that's our last email. I got a couple things for you, Will.
Okay.
Real quick, because we've already gone pretty long in this wrap up that I thought would be quick.
I talked too much.
That's okay. Let's see. No, we already sort of covered some of the stuff we sort of covered. Here's a dumb one. Map the Endless to the cast of Friends.
Jesus.
Go.
All right. Destiny is Gunther.
Okay.
Let's see. Dream is Ross.
Okay.
Death is Monica. Delirium's Phoebe. Chandler is Lucian.
Okay.
Joey is Merv Pumpkinhead.
Okay.
Rachel is Thessaly. That's it. Those are the friends. Yeah, I did the friends and Gunther.
You got Gunther. Good. That was nice of you to include Gunther. Yeah. Some of the stuff I wrote.
Desire is the copy shop girl that Ross has the affair
oh,
with.
Oh, man. Don't bring her up. Some of these things I wrote notes like that's like things to discuss that just sort of came up naturally. I wrote one down like delirium show. I wrote down question mark, which you brought up naturally.
What can I say, man? I'm with it.
So here's the thing I wrote down. This is a thought I had while I was writing up questions for you. None of which I'm going to ask, I think.
None of which you're going to ask.
Most either we've covered parts of them or they're not that interesting. We don't have time. But
Sorry.
I wrote down what I think are the, and you can tell me if this is right or wrong, the five eras of Will's comic book obsession.
Okay.
First, the digest that we had.
Yes.
Marvel reprints, and those DC reprints too, but just like those little digests reprinting old comics.
Yeah, we go into Walden Books, buying like paperback collections of comics mm-hmm. and then reading them. Yeah,
then sure. I think the next evolution for you was Frank Miller's peak stuff. Daredevil, Batman. Mm,
okay. Okay.
Then I might have the order of this wrong. Then Zot.
I think that's right. I went deeper into Zot. Yes, that's right. After the Miller.
And then Love and Rockets. Mm-hmm. So that order, mm-hmm. I wasn't sure, but I didn't know if Love and Rockets was before Zot or not.
It kind of overlaps with Zot, but it went a lot longer than Zot, so it feels like it went
but
after.
But Zot feels like sort of a nice, to me, like a way to slip out of comic books, superhero comic books.
Into more artsy and black and white.
Because it's a superhero comic book.
Yes.
Then Sandman.
Well, Sandman is concurrent with Love and Rockets.
Well, Love and Rockets ran forever.
But actually, Love and Rockets ended in 96 and then started up again in 2001.
Okay.
And they did solo books in the interim. So Sandman and Love and Rockets ended the same year.
But were you already into Sandman when you discovered Love and Rockets, or were you reading Love and Rockets when you discovered Sandman?
They started about the same time.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I might have started Love and Rockets a little bit before.
Do you think there's any other comic that had the impact of any of those? And maybe those aren't the big, maybe Zot doesn't matter.
First of all, thank you for paying enough attention to the things I read that you can even do that.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty good. I feel like there's Dan Clowes and like just Fantagraphics in general mm-hmm. and like sort of like Dan Clowes, Chris Ware, the Los Bros Hernandez, looking back at R. Crumb, Peter Bagg,
you were... I'm trying to think of the things that I just remember you talking about and going back to all the time.
Like early 90s Fantagraphics and adjacent alt comics were, and Sandman was like all I read in the first half of the 90s.
Yeah.
Like while the Clone Saga was going on with Spider-Man and I kind of faded out of, and like the Todd McFarlane Image Comics stuff and like, and the death of Superman, like I was unplugged from superhero stuff and I was plugged into that stuff,
mm-hmm.
like Seattle alt things. And then in the late 90s, you and I basically, well, I got an email account and you and I started talking comics and you got me back into superhero comics starting in the mid 90s and then gradually, and I haven't really ever been that connected mm-hmm. since, but I got a little bit more in touch with it through talking with you.
Yeah. But I don't think there's been anything since then that's had an impact where it's like,
no,
that's excited nothing. You about comic books the way those other things. I mean, I don't even list Alan Moore on there, even though I think he had an impact, but I don't feel like he hit you as hard as those other things. I could be wrong.
I mean,
on
I
that.
I read tons of Alan
sure,
Moore.
Sure. I mean, you like read his entire Swamp Thing run and
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and like all of his, ABC comic stuff and, you know, V for Vendetta and, Miracle Man.
But that felt to me, for you at least, for me, my vision of you, it felt like Frank Miller dwarfed that.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. That's true. And also the Alan Moore stuff almost felt like I was reading books. Like I would read that like I would read like a book or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas Frank Miller was something I'm going to the comic shop waiting for the new issue. Yeah, when Born Again came out, it like blew me away and incinerated me.
Because, I mean, you also really liked Fantastic Four by John Byrne, but I don't remember that having, I think you just like enjoyed it. That was like, oh, this is really good.
You're right. I mean, I went nuts for Frank Miller. I was telling everyone, I wouldn't shut up about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved him.
Anyway, that's just a thought I had. If people are working on a Will Hines comic book retrospective, let's start with those books.
Yeah. What would be that for you?
I don't know.
I'll take a guess, and I have not thought about it at all. So I think you also start with the digests and stuff.
Yes.
And then I think you go into, like, early Outer Limits comics phase, which is, like, John Byrne, Star Trek, Teen Titans kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's, where do I put this? When do you get into, like, Skeleton Key and Kane and, like, kind of...
That was all post-college.
Okay, so... That is a chapter.
Yeah.
We'll put that later. So in between Outer Limits comics and that, how about Bone and Nightwing?
Yeah, that was like high school. Nightwing, well, I mean, I always liked the character of Nightwing, but the, like I always liked Robin Dick Grayson, the character, but I read Teen Titans comics and didn't like them. I always wanted them to be good because I didn't mm-hmm. read Teen Titans during its peak. I read it like at the tail end of its existence. I would say Peter David probably is my second.
Oh, right. The Hulk and all that stuff, yeah.
My second period of comics. Because that was like the first writer that I would follow to a new title.
Okay.
And then probably, I mean, I read a ton of superhero stuff, but did any of that impact me as much? I don't know. Justice League International probably, unless you encompass that into Peter David. But then the next change is probably... Scrooge, Uncle Scrooge comics.
Oh, right. Because
I read that before Bone. And I read indie stuff, but I don't know if I read a ton. Like, I would read, like, Richard Sala's stuff. But I don't know.
Right.
There was never enough of that. And then, like, Kurt Busiek's superhero stuff brought me back to comic books. And then, after I graduated college is when I discovered Skeleton Key and Kane and... Jonan Vasquez, who did Johnny the Homicidal Maniac and Squee, which I think is great. And a bunch of stuff like that. Just like lots of weird stuff that Slave Labor comics did a bunch of stuff like, Mr. Blank that I think is a really fun, weird book. Replacement Gods was a really cool book that never really got started, barely got started that I think is still,
I remember Replacement God.
It was tremendously cool. So that's when I got into, like, my indie scene was much later.
That Ty Templeton did the Replacement God?
No, you're thinking of Stig's Inferno.
Oh, right.
Replacement God was by the guy who did Xander Cannon.
There was somebody... Before the action of the comic, he escapes from a prison. And within each issue, there's a flashback to one of his escape attempts.
There's some of the issues have, like, one page Newt's escapes. Number like 45 or whatever. But it was just like a very convoluted story in this sort of mythical place that I thought was just really cool. I think it just didn't sell and he couldn't keep doing it. And then he started making money doing like layouts for Top 10 or whatever. He's since done some comics on his own. They're great. He's really good. I like Xander Cannon a lot.
Cool.
He does a thing that is basically Oz, the prison HBO show. Crossed with Godzilla. It's like
weird.
It's like an island where they send all the giant monsters. And it's basically a series about them. And it's, you know, fun and silly, but also like well done. Anyway, we're going to take next week off.
Yeah. And then we're going to come back and do Kevin's picks.
We're going to do three recent comics. So these aren't necessarily like my favorite things. These are just three comics. I haven't picked them yet. One will be Immortal Hulk. I'll make you read an issue of Immortal Hulk.
Okay.
And then two other things. Just like, these are current things that are going on. We're mostly just filling time till Christmas.
Yeah.
Then we'll take a few weeks off.
We're going to come back in January and do the Secret Wars.
Right. We'll come back in January fresh and do the Secret Wars, which is what we've been talking about doing after Sandman. We're going to push it off till January.
Yeah.
And we'll do it right, meaning no research, quickly, lots of mistakes. Bad takes.
Let's script one episode and do multiple takes and stuff. We'll see. What if it's like a huge hit?
No way. I don't have the time for that.
Okay.
But yeah, so
all right, well,
we'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye. Screw it. We're just going to talk about comics.
know what an NPE is? Yeah, that's okay. No one does. It's a non-paternal event, and it's what they call it when you do a DNA test and find out that you actually are the milkman's son, or your parents used a sperm donor, or you were adopted and no one ever told you. I'm Eve Sturgis, host of Everything's Relative, where I invite my guests to talk about DNA discoveries and how spitting into a tube has changed their lives for better or worse. Episodes are out every other Friday. Find them on Campfire Media or subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
Campfire.